Bill Parker, Shelley King, thank you both for being with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thanks for having us.
Bill, let's start with a definition. What is financial literacy?
Yeah, so technically financial literacy is just what people know about the financial world, how to manage their money effectively, thinking of simple terms like budgeting, saving, building credit, and how they're able to implement this in their lives to set financial goals and to work toward bringing those to fruition.
It's kind of one of those nebulous parts of life that, where do you learn it? You know, some people learn from their dad. Maybe you learn a little bit in school, but it just, there's a hole there, isn't there?
Exactly. And, you know, one of my favorite things to do as I'm traveling around the state talking about financial education, the importance of financial literacy, is I actually give a pop quiz, especially if I'm talking to educators, just to kind of highlight that although these things seem simple, they can be complex, right? So, but people traditionally, the research shows that the number one place they learn these things is from their parents.
And then good and bad.
Good and bad. Yeah, exactly. Right. It would be great if everyone's parents are, sort of up to snuff, listening to Dave Ramsey and your financial literacy podcast, things like that, because the economic world continues to evolve, whether we're paying attention or not. So even if they knew everything, there's all the more reason to kind of stay up to speed on the new, buy now, pay later, sports wagering, all of these sort of elements that are kind of out of left field and new. It's very important there is no financially literate. There is continual learning and growing in the space.
You know, and Shelley, it's interesting because we have a lot of younger employees that work here with us, and you see things that no matter the year, they are consistent. So, for example, the 20 to 25-year-old subsists on leaving the office and going out to eat every day.
That's right.
And they don't understand the fact that a simple loaf of bread and some peanut butter would save you a tremendous amount of money if you looked at it over the long haul. And maybe, again, we just haven't thought of it that way.
Well, and even these days, just simple fast food for lunch is $15. You add that up over 5 days, and you could have had a week's worth of groceries.
So that's really what we're talking about. Mm. How are you trying to implement financial literacy into education?
Yeah, and you mentioned that, one of the other places that people learn this is in the schools. And we're lucky in Tennessee to be an early adopter of the high school personal finance graduation requirement. So they're required to take a full semester-long course on personal finance in order to graduate. We're trying to work through the Financial Literacy Commission to make sure that, if that's the first time, perhaps it's too late. So how can we introduce this in even elementary school through middle school and high school in age-appropriate ways that kind of use money as the engagement tool, because everyone wants to sort of be able to make these grown-up decisions, but how can we do it in the safe confines of a classroom while still using money to teach these core subject areas in the state? So Tennessee, in many ways, is leading the way in sort of this innovative approach to talking about money throughout the educational system.
Shelley, I mean, you could talk to even second and third graders about just the concept of here's $10, here's mm-hmm. 10 fake dollars, and now you have to make decisions of how you're going to spend that.
They do. And the Tennessee Financial Literacy Commission offers several different ways that we can get financial literacy into schools, but one of the ones that I've enjoyed is watching them learn how to barter and how to determine if I've got this much money and I need to purchase these items, what's a luxury? What's a must-have? And so being able to get those concepts between needs and wants, food versus video games at a young age helps them to, hopefully evaluate what they're doing on the family level.
We're talking about financial literacy and the work of the Tennessee Financial Literacy Commission. Bill Parker is its director, Shelley King with the Department of Treasury, our guests. Financial literacy. How much do you know? Don't worry, we're not going to test you. But it's something that all of us need to think about. Director Bill Parker, Shelley King, the Tennessee Financial Literacy Commission are our guests. What has led to this increased focus on financial literacy?
Well, I think it started in after the Great Recession. There was a huge uptick in interest in how can people better protect themselves financially. This notion towards financial security, financial resilience, and then it was exacerbated by the pandemic. And so there's a growing onus of responsibility that falls on the individual that started, many years ago when we moved away from pensions, when you work your 30 years and the company will take care of you for the rest of your life. Now we're more of a deferred compensation where you have to put money into an IRA or a 401k to start, building that retirement account. When particularly around the pandemic, when people were having a lot of financial challenges, a lot of unemployment, a lot of scrambling to kind of figure things out, that was another sort of wake-up call for families and communities to say, we need to figure this out from a financial resilience, financial security standpoint, so that we can position ourselves to still meet our financial goals. But I would say a lot of it comes from hard times. Hard times kind of force you to figure things out a little bit more.
And yet we have had some degree, you place the adjective on it, we've had some hard times over the last couple of years. We have seen inflation like, for those of us that grew up in the 80s, that's the last time we remember inflation like this. And yet, Shelley, people have been amazed at how much people keep spending, mm-hmm. that no matter how much that fast food is, they keep going.
And they complain about it, but they still keep going.
They still keep going. Mm-hmm. And so it makes you wonder, do people understand, this sounds elitist, I don't mean it to sound, but do people understand that during these kinds of times, you kind of have to adjust your spending?
Mm-hmm. Well, we work for Treasurer David Littlard, and this is his passion. Financial literacy and financial wellness is actually part of people's overall health. You can have a good heart checkup and you can, be healthy overall. But if you're struggling to pay your bills, that stress is going to weigh you down over time. And this is Treasurer's huge passion. The state of Tennessee is one of the most fiscally responsible states in the nation, but yet our populace has one of the highest bankruptcy rates.
Does it start, Bill, with simple things? To me, I guess the most simple would be something like a budget.
Yeah, tracking your expenses, that's the only way to know where your money's going, right? To know if there's if your budget's a little out of whack and, you're spending a little too much eating out, you need to know that you need to track your expenditures to know that, your money's going in that area. And perhaps it needs to go towards emergency savings. There's a big issue around not having enough emergency savings to kind of avoid any minor financial incident that could become a financial catastrophe.
So you're equipped if the brakes need to be replaced, mm-hmm. or your child needs X, Y, or Z.
Any number of things will happen, right? So we have to have some sort of buffer against whatever could be. And that's really where it starts. But, the next step is just being open to talking about it, right? Especially if you're a parent, engage in these conversations around the dinner table about, the household finances or, what you've experienced so that you can make sure that your child has some more information as they approach a similar situation in their life one day. And a lot of our programs that we have through the school systems will include a newsletter that goes home to parents so that, this is actually a way that we help facilitate these conversations that have been so taboo as of late around personal finance, financial decision-making, so that students, they're watching the whole time and they're learning. But if we can open up some conversation, they're going to learn all the more.
How are they learning when they're watching?
Well, they're learning. I mean, it's socialization. They're watching how their parents think about money. If they're fighting about money, they'll pick up on that as well. And so, all of these reasons, you know, we kind of started this by talking about, you know, parents is the number one place that they learn these things, and maybe it's not always the best place for them to learn these things. And so that's why our push is, you know, through the school system so that we can capture all of these students in age-appropriate ways, and give them some good, honest opportunities, you know, especially some experiential learning opportunities, give them some, you know, the ability to make some financial decisions and learn, you know, optimal ways to manage or save or understand what credit is rather than completely avoiding it. It really starts around conversation, and we have to be open with students or our children about what's taking place in our lives and how we're addressing it, so that they can learn and implement these in their lives as well. You know, we always hear from parents, I wish I would have had this when I was in school, right? That's one of the number one things we hear. And now we're really working to optimize what students have access to through the school system. So that high school personal finance class, for example, is a wonderful place for students to do some, you know, project-based learning, to build a, you know, a sample sort of case study scenario, make some financial decisions, and see what the impacts are. And it's really not going to have any impact on the student's life, but they'll have a skill set when they graduate, whether it's higher ed or, you know, the workforce, they'll have some training wheels with which they can, you know, build a framework for living, you know, below their means and saving for the future.
Mm-hmm. And Shelley, kids are magnets for this, because who among us was not at 7 or 8 when you had that dollar bill, that $5 bill, maybe it's a $20 bill now, I don't know, but you had that in your pocket and it just was burning a hole. Mm-hmm. And so being able to talk to them, okay, are you going to spend it right this second, or are you going to try to make the most of that money?
That's right. Do you want a quick candy bar, or do you want to put that money back and after a few weeks, maybe you have enough money to buy that bicycle you've been looking at? And those are those concepts that, yes, they're starting at age 7, but look how that would, you know, do you want to go to lunch every day from work, or do you want to save for a new home?
We're talking about financial literacy through the Tennessee Financial Literacy Commission. Shelley King, Bill Parker are our guests. Today's focus is on financial literacy, and the numbers show that as Americans, we simply don't have as much financial literacy as we should. We don't save as much as we should. We don't budget. We don't make adjustments to our income when we should. The state is trying to work on that through the Tennessee Financial Literacy Commission, work being done in the public schools. Tennessee Tech, for example, has recently made the decision to include financial literacy in the general education requirement starting in 2026. Shelley King, there would be someone listening, I'm sure, who says, why is the state interested mm-hmm. in this?
Well, you know, as I said before, Tennessee is a very well-managed, fiscally managed state, but our populace has one of the highest bankruptcy rates, a huge portion of those who are unbanked. They don't go to a bank or use a bank in any way. And those are the things that, you know, to just get them started with their money so they can make those smart money decisions, because our, as a populace, we're as strong as our weakest links.
Does technology, Bill, play a part in financial literacy?
Oh, it certainly can. And, you know, I would think some of the younger generation in particular gets a lot of financial education through social media. And there's, you know, there's,
and again, maybe some of it wrong.
Yeah, exactly. What technology, I mean, there's a whole sector now, fintech, right? And so, you know, we were talking a little bit ago about how financial education has evolved from learning how to write checks. Now we have payment apps. You know, I referenced Buy Now, Pay Later, where you can acquire something and not even have to pay, you know, right, feel the sort of burden of payment up front. And then you have sports wagering, where an 18-year-old is, you know, as likely to start gambling as they are to start, for example, a Roth IRA or something like that, that really could take advantage of, you know, the time value of money, the longer they have for that investment to grow over time. So, again, all the more reason to address these things through the safe confines of the school system so that, as one becomes an 18-year-old, they're not getting sold these things through their social media, you know, whether it's, you know, investment products or crypto or these other things. But they're getting this foundational knowledge and financial decision making that they can approach some of those opportunities and say, well, maybe I am interested in sports wagering a little bit on my favorite team, but I'm going to use that as entertainment money and not try to hit it big. This is not my path to wealth, right? The simple path to wealth is, you know, kind of these low cost index funds. It's not glamorous, but it's effective in the long run.
Or to take it another way, that also sounds like the same logic of saying, all right, you know, yeah, it'd be great if I could go away to school at some four-year college and get all of that experience, but my family's not in that position, and maybe I can't get a scholarship. So I could go to the community college, and the state could pay for it because of what I've done in high school, and then I could transfer. That's the same kind of decision that you're wanting them to make.
Yeah, no doubt. And when we're talking about financial decision making, you know, you're kind of alluding to, and I know Shelley kind of brought this up earlier, but the economic term that we're referencing is opportunity cost. What else can I do with this money? If I were to pay, you know, if I was going to go to the community college route, how much money am I to save? And what can I do with that money, right? Can I put a little aside and let it grow and kind of get that snowball started as it picks up layer of after layer every year? You know, and it's sort of similarly with eating out, you know, and Shelley said, you know,
or coffee.
I mean, but if you have a financial goal and, you know, these financial decisions around spending, you know, you either value this financial goal saving for a house or whatever it may be, or you value the convenience of eating out regularly, right? So what, and then even a small change could be enough motivation to get one kind of leaning in and really kind of excited about the savings potential, especially when they learn the power of compounding interest and how they can use that in their favor and not just have to pay that interest on a credit card or mortgage or, you know, other financial product over time. But this is really the life-changing information that people need to hear around compounding interest.
Well, and the other part of it, too, you talk about community colleges in Tennessee does make those free. Do you need a four-year degree always to be successful? You can go to community college for free. You can get a trade and come right out of college as a 20-year-old, as an electrician, as a plumber, making great money just apprenticing as you train. So Tennessee really has been very forward-thinking in bringing that opportunity cost and helping lower it for a lot of its populace.
We're talking about the issue of financial literacy with Director Bill Parker of the Tennessee Financial Literacy Commission and Shelley King with the Department of Treasury. There's a comedian who made the joke about literacy, and he said, you know, there are two types of people. There are spenders and savers, or as they're more commonly known, wives and husbands. We're not going to separate it that way, but I do want to throw the question to you, Bill Parker from the Tennessee Literacy Commission. Are there people who are just more inclined to be financial literate and some that maybe are just not?
Well, the research shows us that regardless of income, you know, a large percentage, somewhere close to 80% live paycheck to paycheck. Now, there are also, in looking at the research, there are race and gender differences all the way down the spectrum. But what are the causes of that? Is it a lack of access to financial education? There's sort of a lot that sort of underlie those questions, which is all the more reason why, you know, we're kind of approaching this as a public health concern and to say, we don't want anyone to fall through the gaps. This is life-changing information that sometimes it takes one person from a family, perhaps never gone to college, perhaps has had cycles of poverty. Sometimes it takes that one person to say, I'm going to figure this out and I'm going to make some changes. I'm going to start saving first. I'm going to, you know, really hone in on this. And that could change future generations. And we're trying to do that also through the school system, right? Where we can capture all of these students and help them sort of build this empowerment where they can be able to make these decisions on their own that could, you know, put their budget in line with their values and optimize their life based on whatever goals that they've set out for themselves.
That's such an interesting point, and we've seen it firsthand here in the Upper Cumberland through the Empower Upper Cumberland project. And it's basically that. It's changing how the approach to poverty takes place. It's more what I would call hand-to-hand combat. And showing someone who has watched for years and years, a grandparent, a mother, who has not been able to make those financial decisions, showing them, here's how you do it. Mm-hmm. And many times it can be total generational changes.
It's powerful stuff. Yeah, it's powerful stuff. You know, especially when you see how that compounding interest works, and you understand, you know, people just aren't going to save their way into, you know, financial security. They have to, they have to learn how to invest and let their wealth grow over time as well. So, and some people historically have looked at investing as, you know, they've been risk averse. They don't want to lose their money. They see it more as gambling than, you know, thoughtful investing. And we have to sort of get rid of that as a friction point. Again, because of the way things are working at the sort of the macro economy level with inflation, things are getting more expensive from housing to childcare. And, you know, we have to figure out how to protect ourselves and our families going forward. And the only way to do that is kind of learn the rules of the game so that you can, you know, position yourself to play the game well.
Shelley, how much of it is just also educating young people on whatever you want out of your financial life, you can achieve? One of the things that came out of Tech's research about adding this at the university level was that a lot of students just wanted the ability that if they wanted to go on a trip, if they wanted to go to a concert, to be able to do that without worry that I was going to end up in the negative in my checking account.
Right.
So whatever it is, if you want to save, great. If you want to live within your means, great. If you want to have a $180,000 car, great, if long as you prepare yourself for that.
One of the best analogies I've ever heard about compounding interest and putting money, you know, saving for retirement, saving for college, using the market was, you may not believe in market growth, you may not understand compounding interest, but do you understand inflation? If you understand inflation, then put your money in a place where it can inflate along with the economy so that when you're ready to spend it for college, for retirement, for other reasons, that money has now grown along with the economy.
Do you have to fight, Bill, a sense, and I'm wondering if this has come up in the discussions, almost a sense of entitlement as it relates to money, that I'm owed something? Maybe it's the government, maybe it's my parents, maybe it's this magic genie that kind of flutters around.
Yeah, I haven't really come into the, you know, that's not something I hear very often. I hear most people want to figure out a way to earn, you know, what they have, and to be able to, you know, keep more of that so that they can, you know, have some freedom and flexibility, as you were just describing, to live their life on their own terms. But I haven't noticed the sense of entitlement. Shelley?
You know, we were talking while we were waiting to come in, and maybe it's not entitlement as much as it's a lack of understanding of what's a realistic salary to make. What's realistic about where you're going to live? What kind of car are you going to drive? And, you know, we see college students, you know, come out and they're like, oh, I'm going to make $75,000, I'm going to be great. And is that enough money to live on? Are you going to make that kind of money? How much debt did you take out to get to college? So can you, what's a realistic salary, and can you really live on it?
And maybe even to extend that point a little further, did you do that research before you ever decided to go study this in college?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true.
I mean, that's financial mm-hmm. literacy, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if your goal is to have the car and the house, then there's probably some careers that's mm-hmm. not going to jive with. No matter, you may be the best public school teacher ever, and that's not going to be the reality mm-hmm. of the situation. I mean, is that part of also just this understanding you're trying to teach?
Yeah, I mean, it's really cradle to grave financial decision making, and that for young adults and adolescents, their career path is a huge, it's a very significant financial decision. But again, it starts, they're learning their habits and attitudes and behaviors around financial education, financial decisions as young as seven. And so this is an effort that really has to extend down into childhood and provide some opportunities for students or children to have access to, whether it's real or fake money, but financial decision making. At the grocery store, if you're at the grocery store with your kids, and like Shelley was mentioning, if they're asking for something, that is an opportunity for you to engage in a conversation of, well, you can have this now, or you can delay gratification and get something even better. Start putting it to, saving it. But again, cradle to grave conversation, depending on the life stage one is in, there are all of these various decisions to make. And the one that you were referencing around, college and career, now we have this sort of nebulous thing called AI that could completely change that in a matter of years for those who are maybe even currently in college. So, even if you can make all the right choices, we don't fully know what tomorrow looks like. So the best we can do is just kind of, keep an emergency fund on hand and try to be ready to sort of put yourself in the best position given the circumstances, whatever may happen.
Reality versus non-reality. Let's talk about that as we explore financial literacy with Shelley King and Bill Parker. Our guest is Bill Parker. He is the director of the Tennessee Financial Literacy Commission. Shelley King is with the Department of Treasury. The state is putting resources into making sure our young people are educated about financial literacy. And just before the break, I talked about what's real and what's not. We are a society that drives much of its reality from social media. And keeping up with the Joneses is more in play today than it ever has been. Is that part of this, of helping kids understand that that's not what this is about?
Yeah, certainly. And that starts early, right? I can think back to when I was in school and someone has some nice shoes on, maybe they're basketball shoes, something like that. And you want those shoes too, because you might think that it helps you jump 2 inches higher or run, a little faster. Keeping up with the Joneses starts really early. And so to get ahead of that, right, this is sort of the psychology of money, right? What you sort of grow up learning or feeling, this has to be a topic of conversation. The psychology of money, before there's any dollars and cents exchanged, we have this whole psychology wrapped around sort of our relationship with money, how we've seen people interact with it. We're probably not getting into that in elementary or middle school, but certainly in high school, there's an opportunity to understand the psychology of money and these sort of notions of behavioral economics and how when we're hungry, we might not make as wise financial decisions, right? So there's a lot to it that's more than just kind of managing your dollars and cents that people really have to understand.
And part of the reason I bring it up is we had a recent conversation with social media experts, and they say that that's really affecting adults' mental health, is this just intense, somebody posts the picture of their brand new furniture and you decide, just like the child who says, I want those tennis shoes, now we have to buy furniture for our home. It's a reality with adults. It's not just kids anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as someone who just bought a sofa, I can tell you that it's not glamorous, but it's certainly not cheap either. These are big financial decisions that unless you're saving and preparing for, it can really jolt someone's budget. I keep bringing up this sort of notion of financial education or financial literacy as a public health concern, and you kind of hit the nail on the head there with your this sort of financial stress. And financial stress isn't an isolated stress where it just, anytime you want to spend money, you get stressed out. It's something that really keeps people up at night. How am I going to make ends meet? How am I going to, do I buy groceries or do I, pay my light bill? The United Way has a study called the ALICE study, United for ALICE. ALICE is an acronym, stands for asset limited, income constrained, but employed. It's basically the working poor. And in Tennessee, and basically what that is it's looking at the federal poverty guidelines, and it is adjusting for cost of living, right? So, for example, we have 14% of households in Tennessee that are below the federal poverty guideline in terms of their income. And then another 30%, so we're talking about 44% at large of households in Tennessee that from a survival budget standpoint can barely make ends meet. And so, what does that look like for the parents in that household or the students who are growing up in that household? You know, how is their financial reality sort of different than perhaps the other 60% of the population in Tennessee? And so, all the more reason why we need to get this in the school system early and often, to give them an opportunity to kind of learn the ropes and to build some confidence around these things, to see, I need a job, I need a career, but I need to focus on how I'm managing my finances too. Otherwise, I'm going to be working this job for the rest of my life and not really have any security. I'm going to be living paycheck to paycheck with these golden handcuffs on.
That's the kind of family, and we talk a lot about this in the Upper Cumberland, that the decision comes down to, am I going to eat? Am I going to fix the brakes on my car? Or am I going to have to quit my job because I can't fix the brakes?
No doubt.
On my car. And there are a lot of people who are living like that.
Yep. Yep.
We're discussing financial literacy. Our final moments with Bill Parker and Shelley King are just ahead. The Tennessee Financial Literacy Commission is leading the effort to better install financial education in all of us. Director Bill Parker, Shelley King, the Department of Treasury. How do we measure success with this movement?
Well, success to me is making sure that we know every student going through public schools in Tennessee has access to quality financial education. And I think we're moving in that direction. It would be much easier probably if there were more explicit financial literacy standards, say, and by fourth grade, everyone knows these things. By eighth grade, everyone knows these things. And of course, Tennessee's already kind of leading the way with that high school personal finance graduation requirement. So success to me is everyone has access to this information so that they can kind of choose to implement it in their own lives. But there's also a growing body of research that can compare states that have this graduation requirements and see the difference it makes in the lives of those from a credit score standpoint, which dictates a lot, right? It dictates your interest rate on your mortgage that could, that one thing alone could be $100,000 kind of difference over 30 years. So success to me is we have a full court press for financial education, and nobody falls through the cracks.
Kelly, you see the same thing?
I do. And the Department of Treasury manages not just the Tennessee Financial Literacy Commission, but several savings programs so that people can use that power of compounding interest for the future. One of the ones I think is very helpful is the Tennessee Stars College Savings 529 program. Great way to get your children involved in saving and understanding how money can grow. And there's a secondary program that the Treasury Department manages called TIPS, the Tennessee Investments Preparing Scholars. It offers a 4-to-1 matching grant into a Tennessee Stars account for income-eligible families. And income-eligible, if you have a family of four making a little over $75,000, you're income-eligible. So I would recommend people in the Upper Cumberland go to treasury.tn.gov TIPS and look at that program and see how you can save $25 a week and get a 4-to-1 match up to $500 a year. It's up to $1,500 in your child's life.
That's a great program. Some of the things going on to try to help all of us make some smarter financial decisions. Bill Parker, the director of the Tennessee Financial Literacy Commission. Shelley King with the Department of Treasury. Thank you both for educating us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.